Next up on Free Radio, on the stream of Free Radio, I should say, it's Bathrop Spears Broadsides, the November 18th, 2018 edition. Lots of audio and access to a video of the community survival sleepout, the Camp Quest protest that happened on Thursday, a few days ago. Plus, stuff before, stuff after, hey, lots of stuff. So, stay with me.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
And we will be interspersing the usual songs of social significance throughout this, well, I was going to say 5.5 hour long broadcast. I don't know if it's going to be that long, but Sundays is usually pretty long. We are still not transmitting on Free Radio, still looking for a transmitter site, as we have been for the last month. Also looking, of course, for studio space. Transmitter site simply involves the willingness to put up a transmitter, which you should give a call to talk to me about at 423-4833. I'm not the person who will be doing it, but I can perhaps point you in the direction of people who have that interest. They've told me they're interested, and I believe they are. Free Radio has been a classic signature part of Santa Cruz for 2.5 decades, and I'm sorry if we're losing it now, at least as a broadcasting medium. It's small, but we say things that other folks don't say. And you also have access as a member of the community to become a broadcaster. And if that interests you, also either get in touch with me at 423-4833. I'm one of the collective. Or go to the freakradio.org website. That's freakradio, one word, small letters, freakradio.org, .org. And you'll get information on how to apply, as well as there being some archives of some of the shows of some of the different broadcasters and other information about Free Radio. Which is right now the stream of Free Radio. So, as I have been doing pretty repeatedly for the last year or two, I will be again reminding you that you have a $300 reward coming your way. If you can find us a 10x10 space for a year, either indoors or outdoors, we'll set up the outdoor structure with access to bathroom, internet, and a telephone line and electricity, where we can set up a studio space in Santa Cruz or nearby. And just again, get in touch with us at freakradio.org or give me a call on the HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom line, the same number, 423-4833, or 423-HUFF, 423-HUF for short. In times of protest, and who knows if this season is going to be turning into one of those seasons, it's always nice to have some real alternative media covering these things in a more, if not minute by minute, at least day by day kind of approach, which has been the case in the past with Free Radio. We go out there, we give you the details that you might not otherwise get unless you were either on the scene yourself or had a friend who was. So support us and you'll get more information on the ongoing struggle. The struggle that I'm most interested in and been mostly involved with, at least writing a lot about, is the struggle for winter survival and civil rights for folks outside, whether they be unhoused, travelers, newly displaced urban residents, victims of rental profiteering, you name it. But the category homeless, which some people don't like for different reasons, saying some one person saying, oh, this is too broad a category, it covers too many different people. But really what it boils down to is if somebody needs or wants housing and can't get it, and that can be for a variety of reasons, but all those people suffer similar discriminations, and that is what has concerned me and continues to concern me and concerns this show. It's what I talk a lot about. So there was a lot of publicity, at least I put a lot of energy into some of the publicity I wrote, about the last Thursday's community survival sleepout, or what I also called Camp Quest, which was an attempt to kind of mark clearly the fact and expose strongly the Santa Cruz City Council's mendacity, that is to say they're a bunch of liars in sort of simple English, and the abusive policies of police and Parks and Rec regarding homeless people citywide here in Santa Cruz, particularly around the closing of the River Street campground, the Boneyard Barbed Wire campground, which I've criticized repeatedly on this show, but which did provide tent space and daytime tent space and storage space for about 60 people, although it was advertised as originally providing more, and various other claims were made. You couldn't have, there were problems too, no visitors behind barbed wire, couldn't come and go as you needed to go or wanted to go, had to do it by a specific schedule. You were treated kind of like a, I don't know, minimum security prison population, though it was certainly far less the case than in winter shelter type, armory type places where there were very strict regulations. You couldn't come and go except on the transportation. You couldn't bring your car up there. You can't bring your car to the, you couldn't to the River Street campground either. The River Street campground is not entirely closed, but as I understand it, although I haven't gotten any new information recently, and I may be a little out of date here, it has been closing by drips and drabs. The initial closing group of people, the initial send-off of people was supposed to be November 16th. That would be a couple of days ago now. This show is being recorded on the 17th for broadcast on the 18th, so I'm going to pretend I'm on the 18th so you won't be confused if you happen to be listening to it, as it is streams on the 18th, which is the normal scheduled streaming time for this Sunday edition of Bathrobes Pier's Broadsides. And again, for newcomers who don't know, Bathrobes Pier is the name that I give myself because of the kind of costume I wear when I'm involved in protest activity or speaking to our city or shitty council, depending on how you view them. And it's in solidarity with, and it's sort of a satire on the, and a reminder of the fact that sleeping is de facto criminalized by the city of Santa Cruz. And someone will immediately grab me and say, oh, wait, the decision in Boise by the federal court on September 4th held that these camping laws are thrown out, and the police chief of Santa Cruz, Andy Mills, has announced that he is not going to be enforcing that, and he's also not going to be enforcing a similar law. So what's your complaint? What do you mean sleeping is not a crime in Santa Cruz outside anymore? That's all been changed. Well, first, to give the devil her due, it is true that there have been very few sleeping tickets issued either by Parks and Rec, and I can't really say by the police, because they're still refusing to give me access to their records. I called them 3 days ago after having put in a Public Records Act request, as is supposed to legally require them to make available for us to look at the kinds of citations they've been issuing, to whom, by whom, where they were done, what the charges were, and so forth, what the time of the citation was. And in the past, it's been a little difficult getting this stuff from the police, but for some reason now it's getting a little more difficult. I'm not sure why. Who knows? Maybe it's just a temporary bureaucratic tie-up, but I put in a record request more than 3 weeks ago in mid-October, and I'm getting told that I have to clear it with the city attorney. Anyway, I will grant that the police chief and the head of Parks and Rec, Tony Elliott, either issued orders or at least there seems to be a policy in place that has to do with less ticketing of people. And that is a good thing, But the reality also is that people who are trying to form their own encampments have not yet been assured in any clear way that they will not be molested and that they can actually set up a tent and bundle themselves up against the cold and the crappy smoke-filled atmosphere and try to survive the winter without getting rousted and being told they have to move to, and of course there's no answer to that. Although, I do have to say that on Saturday morning when I talked to some campers in the Ross Camp Village, the tent city that's sort of sprung up behind Ross's Best for Less, or Dressed for Less, I should say, near the Highway 1 area, I was told that park people or fire department officials, I'm not sure which, had directed them to come to the Ross Tent City, which is in no way being clearly supported. There are no, I'm not aware that there are trash pickups there. I'm not aware. I see no porta potties there. I'm told that Ross and other places have closed their bathrooms so that people can't use their bathrooms there. Try to use a bathroom at Denny's, and they have a special system where they don't even have a code that you can maybe get from a caring patron who gets the code, unlocks the door, and then lets you in or whispers the code to you, as can happen at Loudoun Nelson Center. But rather, the bathroom lock is controlled by the management from the management desk at Denny's. So I was witnessed on the evening of the protest, that early morning hours of November 16th. The protest began on the 15th, and the sleepout continued through the 16th. A black guy with a big backpack was told he could not use the bathroom because he had a big backpack, and I was not allowed to have a backpack. And that, of course, let's be charitable and say it wasn't racial profiling, though I think that's what he thought it was, and that's what I wondered if it was, because Denny's has been notorious for that, at least nationwide, and not necessarily in Santa Cruz, although please, black folks out there or people who are friends of black folks, let me know if that in fact has been happening. I will publicize it, and maybe that will put some pressure on these clowns to think twice before they do it the next time. But it was because of the backpack, the homeless status, although I would say 95% of the, well, a great number of the people in Denny's at 2 and 3 in the morning when I was there on Friday morning were homeless. They were told they have to leave their backpacks outside. Now, you can't really watch your backpack outside while you're in Denny's, particularly when they closed off half the restaurant that has most access to the windows. And it's if your survival gear is there, if your clean laundry is there, if your legal papers are there, it's obviously a real risk for you to leave them, since lots of theft continues to happen, homeless on homeless and elsewise, in Santa Cruz. So in any case, and I'm a little worried that I did a little misrecording there. So again, let me clarify. I'll be playing some late-night conversations at Denny's the night of the protest, where I and about 25 other people stayed overnight on the grounds of the post office sidewalk area between the post office and, I guess it's either Water Street or Mission Street. I'm not sure what it's called as it approaches and passes the town clock, but it's that street. The actual protest itself did not lead to an actual camp quest that night, or at least didn't lead very far. We ended up camping at the post office sidewalk, which kind of was a historic spot last year, where people who began to camp once they'd been falsely charged with blocking the sidewalk at City Hall, which produced the end of the Freedom Sleepers. They finally left because they were threatened with misdemeanor charges, and people were exhausted after 2 years of weekly protests there and 3 months of nightly protests by a group I call the Survival Sleepers, who were people who had been dumped from the Armory, I should say rather from the Association of Faith Communities Winter Shelter Program. There was no and has been no armory for the last few years open to the public or open to the homeless public or open to a small section of the homeless public as winter shelter. And people a year ago went into the area in front of the post office, which at that time did not have a huge wrought iron fence around it, but there's still a sufficient space on the sidewalk for blocking the sidewalk to not be a credible charge outside the main post office. And of course, now we have the Martin versus Boise decision mentioned before, which threw out the Boise law against camping and another law against disorderly conduct having to do with criminalizing homeless people in public because of their status on a citywide basis. Santa Cruz has a much more sophisticated way of doing this. It claims not to be concerned about whether you're homeless, although it has had a sleeping ban after 11 o'clock at night until 8:30 in the morning, and that ban is still on the books, though supposedly not being enforced. I think there were one or two tickets by Parks and Rec after the September 4th ruling by the federal courts. But there are other things that are used. Lying down is a crime on Pacific Avenue and the adjacent streets. Sitting within 14 feet of a window, bench, curb, fence, telephone booth, you name it. It leaves about, I estimated at one point, less than 1% of the space on Pacific Avenue available for people to sit, and 0% of the space on many of the other business district streets, since this applies not merely to Pacific Avenue, to other business districts, technically illegal places for people to sit if they aren't sitting at a bench. And, of course, there are some benches downtown, many of them removed since they were originally put in after the earthquake, with promises that as they were tearing out all the long, beautiful brick, waist-high brick benches that had been there, or brick planters that had been there, that were being used as benches. But they would put in benches for people to sit on. But of course, the many benches that they supposedly planned to put in, and some of which did get put in, perhaps all of them did, at least half were removed within 5 or 10 years, and more have been removed since. So you get to sit, if you pay, at the sidewalk cafes, which have also encroached on and occupy significant parts of the downtown Pacific Avenue sidewalk area. Anyway, these kinds of sit on the sidewalk is illegal. Have to, if you're going to perform as a musician, even if you don't sit, you have to be inside one of these disced, four square disced boxes, which of which there are relatively few along Pacific Avenue, and you can only be there for an hour if you have what's called a display device, which isn't a big poster or a sign. It's a table or an open guitar case or a cap on the sidewalk, anything, quote, capable of holding tangible things. Of course, if you're a merchant, you have a huge A-frame sign, which is illegal under their law. Ah, you see, that's fair. You see, they have signs banning the merchants from having their bad signs. And, ah, but they don't enforce that law. And indeed, they even go so far as to warn the merchants about it. I believe Deputy Chief Martinez wrote a letter to the merchants in the summer of 2016 advising them that they had to remove their A-frame signs. Did any of them do that? Take a walk down Pacific Avenue and see. So when I wrote to Martinez to find out what was going on and got no response, and then when I wrote to our liberal council member, Sandy Brown, to say, Sandy, can you send an email to Deputy Chief Martinez asking what's going on with that? Because after all, it seems unfair to go after one group and not another. At least, have any tickets been issued for these merchants, for these huge signs that continue to stay there not just for an hour, which is an amount of time that a homeless person can sit with a cap on Pacific Avenue, or a musician can play, or a political tabler can table. But, I mean, have they gotten any kind of consequence? Is there any fairness, even apparent fairness here? And Sandy Brown had an hour-long conversation with me. She looked great, very interested, was very concerned. I'll send that off. That'll be fine, Robert. We'll do that. And months later, she hadn't done it. I wrote her back, said, what's up, Sandy? She said, oh, I'm sorry, but you know, I've had health problems, or I'll get to it. A year later, she still hadn't done it. Anyway, this has gone on, and you've heard me talk about this and other issues that Brown has not responded to. Maybe she doesn't like being reminded of this stuff. That's possible. But so what I recently had to do was put in a Public Records Act request to find out what was going on myself. And what happened was I got another letter from Sandy Brown that said, look, I've done this emailing. I just somehow have lost the emails that I sent out. And I said, well, can you find them and send me a copy? She said, sure, sure. And of course, nothing came to me. And so I sent out an email saying to the city saying, can you please send me copies of all emails from Sandy Brown to this and to various other city staff members that she'd agreed to email? And what I received back was that Sandy Brown has sent no emails to any of those people. And you might say, well, give it up, Robert. This is one activist has said to me, you're beating a dead horse here. What the heck? You know, I mean, besides, Sandy Brown is a progressive person. She favored rent control. She favors inclusionary housing. She's sympathetic with homeless people in some respects, or at least talks that way. She has indeed, give her some credit, has on one occasion, on a number of occasions, said if anybody wants to discuss an issue at city council that's on the consent agenda, which normally you members of the public can no longer discuss beyond 2 minutes, she will pull the item off the agenda so that a staff report will be heard and so that people can actually, other people can talk about that issue without having to beg and plead for the city council to do that and then wait to see if a city council member pulls it off. She's given a kind of a blanket promise. And she has kept that promise, and good for her for doing that. Anyway, I mentioned this simply to sort of as an update with what's going on with her. Even one of the more liberal city council members, and it's one of the reasons I'm rather cynical about the elections of people like Justin Cummins, who looks like he's going to be on the council. I think he came in second. And Drew Glover, who may yet get on the council and beat out Greg Larson. It's not quite clear that's going to happen, but he already seems to have beaten out Rochelle Narayan, which it's hard for me to complain about. Although Rochelle had her independent streak in some respects, as sometimes even the most gruesome council members have, like Pamela Comstock, who actually put in, along with Micah Posner, the only 24-hour restroom we had for a while in the Soquel parking lot garage until the staff sabotaged that and closed it. Of course, they'll tell you it was the homeless who sabotaged it. Oh, vandalism, shooting up in the bathrooms, that sort of thing. And I don't deny that kind of thing can happen. But the amount of vandalism, as at the Loudon Nelson bathrooms, which are still closed as of this time, as far as I know, to the elderly, the disabled, the sick, the community generally, and most specifically homeless people, it's not been documented there or in the San Lorenzo parks or anywhere else that there has been any significant difference in vandalism than in other places, and that isn't just a legitimate cost of doing business in a civilized society in a modern, what is essentially a modern urban environment. That's what we got in Santa Cruz. We got 60,000 people. We got two university and a college. We got a beach boardwalk. You got a lot of stuff going on there, and you have, of course, a large homeless population evicted because of the rent profiteers in part because of the job situation. And they'll tell you, see, there's lots of employment available signs. I just look around. You know, you go to, Target or any of these big stores, and you'll see, employees wanted. True enough, but you have to, of course, be able to rent a room somewhere to be able to take a job. You have to be able to wash your clothes to be able to do that. You have to have transportation to get to work. These are little details that somehow escape the notice of the Take Back Santa Cruz crew and the crew that likes to sling mud and crap at homeless folks and people who advocate for civil rights for everybody, including homeless folks. Anyway, all this is kind of an introduction to the fact that I'm going to be playing not all of the speeches that happened on the 15th of November, but some of them. That's the speeches that we had at the City Hall sleepout. Now, I'm falling asleep here as I talk. Let's say rather at the post office sleepout, which didn't at one point go to City Hall, but then came back from there to end up putting sleeping bags down on the ground at the post office. In some respects, as I said, as a kind of a tribute to the fact that a year ago, it was those sleeping bags on the ground, the sort of sleeping bag city that began to develop there, a collection of folks who were sleeping, that may have persuaded then police chief and now police chief Andy Mills to direct people to go to San Lorenzo Park, which he and the Parks and Rec people, well, I don't know if he's done it, but he's certainly hasn't protested it or spoken against it, fenced off San Lorenzo Park, closed the bathrooms, and essentially has set up a no-go zone in the parks, even as all the parks citywide are being closed because of fire danger, which is apparently likely to continue, I would guess, at least until the middle of next week when it starts to rain. And maybe now that they've used that as a nice excuse, they can continue to do that for a longer period of time. Parks, of course, are often places where homeless people go to hide and rest. You know, survive, that's what's the operative word. And why don't they go to Fresno? Well, because there are a lot of Fresno homeless there already. And this kind of condition is the case everywhere in this, well, I would say in this country, but I can't speak for all places, but I've heard that other places do the same kinds of thing. They will say, oh, they're all coming to my city. It's a magnet effect. Documentation is needed if people are going to make this claim about Santa Cruz. And I suppose you should read the arguments about, if you want to follow this and see, hear the arguments that are presented on behalf of this claim of a magnet effect, go to the Santa Mierda, that's the Santa Shit website, as it's called by its anti-homeless author, who I think people have advised me of the guy's name, but it's not the identity of the person that's so important, although I often chide people on the Sentinel comment section, the so-called Discus comment section. That's what the name of the Santa Cruz Sentinel online website comment section is called. If they don't give their names, they just like to attack homeless folks and homeless activists like yours truly, that they are they're hiding. They're not taking responsibility for what they say. But, of course, you should consider the merits of their arguments, and that's always worth doing, even if you're talking to someone who seems pretty clearly bigoted. I wouldn't spend lots and lots of time doing that, but, well, in any case, before we get to that, at least part of that speak out, and all of it can be found, by the way, if you've been wading through my verbiage here and wondering when that you're actually going to hear some of the actual protest. There was a great video made of the whole thing by activist Wes White, or Whip Him Into Shape Wes, as I call him, from Salinas. And you can find it if you go to the Santa Cruz Indie Media website. And that's at indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, IndieBay.org/Santa Cruz. And look for the story on the right side of the screen, Community Survival Camp Established at Santa Cruz Post Office. And then you can find the link, which is in one of the comments, which takes you directly to the two-hour speak out. I'm going to be playing a little of it, but since it's all there online and you can get it easily that way, I'm going to give preference to other folks who aren't online and whose stories are just as important as those of us blowhard, housed, homeless activists who often seem to take a lion's share of the microphone time. So, let's go musical, and I'll be back.
Keep the lights out for this one, all right? If I do one, baby, one in five, no one here gets out alive now. You get yours, mama, I'll get mine. Gonna make it big.
yeah, we're taking over. Come on.
And that was The Doors 5-1 from Olden Times. It's quite a flashy video, black and white, but lots of cops coming to lots of musical events and beating a few heads. So we turn now to the few minutes right before the main speaking began at the Thursday evening Community Survival Campground, or Camp Out, or Camp Quest. And I'm going to play some of these kind of updates, which are people talking about what's been happening to them in court, how they've been faring on the streets, what kind of discrimination they've been experiencing in different places. And also, you know, there's the occasional positive comment, believe it or not, every now and then. Then we launch into the actual Speak Out, which I'll play the beginning of. And if you find it interesting, I'll encourage you to continue listening to it on Santa Cruz Indie Media through Wes White's YouTube channel. The way to get to his YouTube channel is you can go to YouTube John and then Doe14K. I make sure I got that number right. So let me correct that. It's John and then the word Doe13K as one word. Capital D-O-E, 13, then small K, will get you to Wes White's video channel. And the name of the actual two-hour video is More Fences, More Tickets, Less Winter Shelter. And that's nicely done both as a video and an audio. You can also reach it, as I was saying before, by going to Santa Cruz Indie Media and looking for More Fences, More Tickets, Less Winter Shelter as a sort of a kickoff line. But you'll hear some of it here, and I'll repeat that again when I move on or when we end this segment so you can, in case you missed it, pick up on it. But a lot of eloquent speeches, but of course speeches are just speeches, and that's something we should remember. And it's easy to forget if you're warm and comfortable indoors. Speeches sound great, but they don't do anything other than echo and then disappear.
Continuing saga of, I guess the tickets were for what again?
Impaired in public or something, and resisting arrest.
And the actual substance of it was your failure to obey some kind of authoritarian demand?
Yeah, they wanted me to stand still and not watch the dog I was watching.
You were in a vehicle, or?
I was outside the vehicle, the dog was in the vehicle, but the door was open, and the issue happened because I was trying to shut the door.
And we talked about this about a week ago. You were concerned because you were going to court this week. What happened in court?
I wasn't on the docket. The DA chose not to prosecute.
Did you find that out just because, is that your presumption because you weren't on the docket, or do you?
No, I went to the DA's office, and she said they have up to a year to file.
How exciting. So they can fuck with you for the next year.
Yeah, that ain't, you know, what I'm wishing for, but, yeah. And so I still have a court date for just an infraction for the open container, taking that to trial or fighting it however I can.
And really, this is kind of outrageous. If the police department gives someone a citation, and it's a relatively simple citation, the DA should not be able to keep a pendulum hanging over someone's head for a whole year on that issue. It's outrageous. And it essentially produces, I think, a tendency to abuse, because what that means is even if a police officer tends to give a whole bunch of valueless citations based upon his desire to, let's say, get you to leave town or make you pay more attention to showing him the kind of respect you don't feel for him that he's not earned, but that he wants you to show him because he's got a badge, a gun, and I don't want to say a fat salary, but certainly a fatter salary than many. He probably still can't afford to the kind of rents in this town. He shouldn't have that kind of power to continue to say, see, you better behave for the next year, or I might come in and do a prosecution of you because of my close ties with the district attorney. Anyway, but it still is always good news when you come to court and you find that they're not prosecuting. But again, the bad news has been all the time you've wasted, whether you've been, maybe you've been arrested, maybe you've had to post bail, although bail is no longer an issue in California for the moment. Now it's a matter of pleasing the judge, which is going to be an equally onerous task, if not more so, perhaps. And then it's a question of having to come to court for a variety of hearings before they finally admit that what they were doing all along was harassing you. This is what happened to me and others who were charged with conspiracy to vandalize and conspiracy to trespass in what was essentially a persecution and prosecution for being a part of the Occupy Santa Cruz movement and walking into a building that another faction had seized in order to, they wanted a community center, and they wanted to highlight the fact that Wells Fargo is a major criminal profiteer in the financial breakdowns of 2008, 2009, and the destruction of many people's life savings through the kinds of loan practices they were engaging in, the felonious loan practices that they never really had to pay for and that the government bailed them out of. Under Obama, you know, the great Obama, that was so much better than Donald Trump. You may remember this great, there's a great difference between them. You know, Obama, the war maker, versus Trump, the war maker. You know, good luck. See if you can tell them apart in the dark or in the light in terms of the kinds of policies they're pursuing abroad. In any case, let's hear more from our man who was able to come to court and find that the phony resisting arrest and obstructing an officer or not obeying an officer ticket that had to do with his trying to make sure his dog didn't get out of the car, by his account, that was, I suppose, relief for him. But now he has to deal with an open container citation. That's, of course, the law that says, if you happen to be homeless, you can't have an open container, though you may be sober as a judge and have opened it because you have no other place to be. You have to be in public when you're homeless and when you drink. If you're an adult, you may drink. And that's the question is how you behave, not what you consume. That, of course, is kind of the key issue around this whole drug war nonsense and the reefer madness nonsense and even the hard drug, man. The hard drug harassment and massive prison incarceration that goes on around that in Santa Cruz. Yes, in Santa Cruz as well as elsewhere.
Have you gone to arraignment on that one?
Yeah, so December 21st is the court date.
So let us know a week or two before that. Maybe we'll send in either an observer or... It's probably I'm not sure, it's the commissioner who hears that usually, and I'm not sure who the new commissioner is. The old one is now a judge. She got, should we say, elevated because of her baseness. Like they really, really loved her baseness, so they gave her a higher place to which to practice her baseness. She was horrible, and she still is, as far as I know.
She's the one that arraigned me.
Oh.
Yeah.
And she didn't dismiss the charge.
Right. So.
Yeah, that's...
I got a fight ahead.
Basket, is that my mistake, is her name. Do you want to say who you are, or shall we keep it under wraps?
I don't mind. Scott Bly.
Okay, Scott, so keep us advised. Any further citations?
No.
Okay. Sounds good.
A little harassing 2 weeks ago by a ranger when I was waiting to sign up for the downtown streets team. I didn't know I could just walk in because it already started. So I was waiting outside in their parking lot, and the ranger yells from the other side of the fence, "You can't be there." I said, "I have business here. I'm going to write you a citation." And he got angry, and I raised my voice, so people came out and said, "No, he's with us. Leave him alone."
You really, you know, you're cutting into the fun time of the rangers, Scott. I mean, what's going on here?
I just don't like being profiled. Think I'm up to something that bad, then ask me what I'm doing. Don't just tell me I can't be there.
You're here. And we've been talking with?
Scott Bly.
Thank you, Scott.
Venice Beach has, it's called No Man's Land. It's one street set aside for between Venice and Santa Monica. All the street is open to camp.
Is there trash pickup, porta potties, perhaps?
I don't think porta potties, but there is trash pickup.
And have you been down there and camped?
Yeah, like 4 years ago.
Wow, because I know...
Well, 3 years ago, I started, and then last year I stayed on the beach for 3 weeks. I didn't mess with the street. I just slept on Santa Monica's beach because you can. You can on Venice's beach, though. So I just like went half a mile down the block on the beach.
Well, I know that some activists in Santa Monica and Venice have been trying to support the rights of vendors on the beach and homeless people and performers on the beach,
yeah,
and homeless people in their vehicles. I'm not sure how that's been coming. Welcome. Grab some drink, grab some food if it's around. I guess there's bagels. Hmm. So we're sitting up here. Food Not Bombs banner is going up on the fence. Small table set up. Steve Plage is here, as well as was Anthony Prince from Berkeley, Wes White from Salinas, Lisa from Home Free, and of course, Scott from God knows where.
Michigan.
From Michigan. You taking off from Michigan?
Excuse me?
Are you taking off?
No.
You're going to be here for a while.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it looks like a cluster of at least 20 people. There's a peculiar-looking guy with a weird mask on. And we, of course, have smoke problems from the fires up north. Yeah. Some people are sporting masks.
I've actually cut down my smoking.
I see. Well, you're doing your bit to add a little smoke to the air with your cigarette. Crazy thing.
I was homeless for a little over a year, and people are going to die if something isn't figured out, and... Even though I'm not homeless anymore, I feel like the disenfranchised need advocates, and I am willing and able to do so, and that's why I'm here.
And your name is?
Clinton Hubbard.
And who is this individual? She looks suspicious to me. I recognize that laugh, though. Wow, what a laugh. It's a great laugh.
Her name's Andrea.
Hey, Andrea.
My name is Andy, actually. I am here because we lost over 70 people last winter on the streets, largely due to sabotage from Take Back Santa Cruz. People were getting their tents slashed open, their sleeping bags slashed open, having cold water thrown underneath them, and dying of exposure. And that was more than in the last 3 years combined. And I knew a lot of those people. And I don't think that... human life, taking a human life is worth, you know, your property values. I think that life is priceless.
You should mention that there were rangers doing that.
Yeah, well, some of the people were involved in the legal system. And we, you know, we were aware of this. It's hard to fight for yourself and your people when you have to struggle to find something to eat every day, to keep warm every day, you know? Like, it's...
Are you outside now?
We are currently living at a sober living environment, so we're not outside, but we're here to show our support because any second the roof over our heads could be taken away, just like it has been in the past. So,
did you get your child back?
Not yet. We are moving up in our visits. We are speeding through this process, so we're on the right track, and we're doing well. So,
CPS still has your kid in their clutches.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Fortunately, our social worker has been very good to us. She's gone to bat for us on a couple of different things. And I think that comes with, you know, working with people, getting to know them, not like allowing your prejudices or your preconceived notions to guide your interpretation of other humans.
Andy, you mentioned that our social worker has been great, but the person that she works under has not been. And though our social worker is actively trying to advocate for us, she's running into brick walls because her boss is essentially
jaded,
and to my, like, if I were to guess, is, you know, seeing us as like, oh, a couple of homeless drug addicts who like couldn't possibly take care of a kid, and even though that's not the case, stigmas like that are hard to shake.
Now, are you two going to be sleeping here overnight, do you think?
No, but we will be staying here until the last bus leaves.
When will that be?
I don't know. I think 10.
Okay. And again, we've been talking with...
Clinton Hubbard.
And...
Andy Reyes.
And Steve Plage here has a schedule to keep.
Yes,
Steve, you want to make an announcement of whatever you wanted to talk about here?
Where's Keith? We can start our speech time here.
Yeah.
Okay. Might as well start whenever you can.
Okay.
Speechifying. So, Anthony, he's got to go, so I'm putting him first.
Why don't we have the speeches so that, because I think he was right, it looked better at the beginning.
And as far away from the street as possible.
Yeah.
And this is when the actual audio and video of Wes White is beginning, and you can actually hear these speeches very well, considering all the ambient or distracting noise. That we were right on the main, next to the main street that goes through Santa Cruz. That's the street out to Highway 1, Mission and Water. So let's hear some of that before we turn to other things that aren't already available on other media.
So you're the master of ceremonies, or one of them, or the mistress of ceremonies?
Welcome, everybody. We're going to do our speak
out. Keith McHenry.
And so I'm Keith, and I'm one of the people that started Food Not Bombs in 1980. I was part of the Freedom Sleepers campaign that went on for 2 years every Tuesday outside of City Hall. And as a result of that action, there became a vote against the sleeping ban, unfortunately. They allowed the sleeping ban to continue, but they have like a little, another study group of city councilors who then said, oh, wouldn't it be good to have shelter and a campsite and electric outlets and showers and things like that. So really the only tangible thing that seemed to have come of that is this, the River Street camp at the old Boneyard, and there was talk that it would last into April during the rainy season, and then last month they ended up, the same day they announced they were going to shut it, starting to phase out the people living there in the middle of November, that they would end by the end of November, everybody would be out, the place would be shut down. You would get the option of being first come, first served to stay at the the Veterans of Foreign Wars building on 7th, and you had to catch a van down here to go out there. And they also fenced off the San Lorenzo Park, and they put up this new metal fence around the post office. So it seemed like a very massive anti-homeless campaign happening right before the rain. And so that's why we called this action, to try to come up with a survival camps for the people that are being denied access to shelter in this town. There was a Boise decision where they can't be ticketing you for living outside if they don't provide enough shelter. But instead, it appears that they're giving people trespassing tickets and other tickets like that. And so they're still harassing the people living outside and not providing very adequate options for people. So that's the basic premise, and we're going to be here. And then there's a public works committee meeting, planning commission meeting at City Hall, where they're talking about redeveloping downtown with luxury condos. And so we were going to march over there and set up the camp like we had before in that area, if that's what people want to do. And then if it seems like the pressure and the police are too intense, then we have thought about maybe either moving back here, because this is like a no person's land. No one's really claiming responsibility that much for this. So we might be able to get away with it here, although there is a suggestion of moving to the county building and camping on the grass outside the anti-homeless fence that was put up there.
And ultimately, as I mentioned before, what happened that night was we went to the Planning Commission at City Hall. A few of us spoke. We kind of assembled there. There was a small group, a relatively small group, so small that some of us thought we should perhaps even abandon the idea of the protest for that night. But instead, we decided to go back to the post office area, where it turned out people began to gather, and we ended up having about 25 folks sleeping, three or four of them in vehicles. I was one of the vehicular sleepers, and I'm going to be playing a lot of that as we go on. Here's a little more of Keith, and then we will, again, if you're interested, it's a two-hour-long series of speakers, and some of them very eloquent, a lot of it very interesting. I would encourage you to follow it on John Doe 13K, the YouTube channel that Wes White has, or alternately you can go to Indie Bay and follow it there, Santa Cruz Indie Media, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, and you'll find it at, as I said before, more fences, more tickets, less winter shelter.
So anyway, that's the introduction to the events. So who wants to speak first? Okay, Steve will speak from the ACLU. Is that
yes,
what you're Okay, cool.
Thanks for coming, everybody. This is a great gathering of people who are in support of really what we have here in Santa Cruz is a sheltering emergency. I'm on the Northern California Santa Cruz Chapter Board for the ACLU. I've also been a member of the Conscious in Action group trying to open bathrooms here in town, and also Freedom Sleepers, where we camped out at City Hall for 2 years trying to convince them that the shelter inadequacy that exists in our city and community is simply not just a civil rights violation, a civil liberties violation, but also a human rights violation. In that vein, 2 years ago, when they first came down with the Boise v. Idaho decision, I drafted a letter to the Northern California affiliate of the ACLU, who provides all of our legal assistance for us. I asked them, pleaded with them, to intercede here in Santa Cruz, to instigate litigation, to protect people who were being ticketed, who were being criminalized for living outdoors in violation of what then was simply a Department of Justice statement of interest. That statement had a lot of currency, really, with people who were trying to develop legal strategies. What has happened since is that now there is the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal decision in Martin, who was simply another plaintiff in that same action. And they have said, by their holding, and it's precedent in the Ninth Circuit, that it is illegal to criminalize folks for status, the status of being homeless. It's illegal to criminalize them by ticketing them for disorderly conduct tickets, for camping ban tickets. They can, however, the loophole is that they can still ticket people for trespassing in private spaces and trespassing in regulated public spaces. So in September, I issued another demand and request to the ACLU, asking them to please come here to Santa Cruz. We have a unique situation. We have per capita one of the largest homeless populations in the country. We have many, many people here who live on the streets who have no means of sheltering themselves at night. We need to address that. And if we can't address it through direct actions like this, if we can't direct it by sleepovers, by petitioning the city government, as we have done with Freedom Sleepers and we have done with Conscious in Action, then we need also to develop legal strategy. I'm confident that the Northern California affiliate of the ACLU will come to our aid, that they will provide legal assistance, that we will get some court action here, and we will force our city officials to create the shelter that we need in our city. Adequate shelter for the number of people who are unsheltered every single night in Santa Cruz, which, as many people know, is as many as 1,000. We have sheltering for perhaps 150 or 200 of those. By contrast, San Francisco has a homeless population of 7,500. They shelter fully half of their unsheltered people. Half, 50%. We shelter perhaps 10 to 15, 20%. Unacceptable at any level unless it's 100%. But we are doing this every day. We are trying to get legal strategies going every day. We are trying to get direct actions. But please participate when you can, where you can, and as you can in direct actions like this. Go to City Hall. Talk to the Planning Commission. Talk to city officials. Stay here tonight. Demand your rights. Demand that they address the sheltering emergency that exists in our community. Because unless we speak up about it, then it will not be addressed. Believe me, they don't want homeless people in Santa Cruz. They are the other. I am proud to be the chairman of the board as well for MHCAN, which is a mental health client action network. We are the only peer-owned, peer-operated, peer-staff provider of mental and behavioral health services in this county. We are also considered to be the other. The community sometimes doesn't want us because they don't understand people with mental behavioral challenges. They don't understand people who are unsheltered. They try to criminalize those folks because of the status of being unsheltered. Not only is that constitutionally impermissible, it is a human rights violation, as I said. It is a civil rights violation. We should all show up, stand up, and speak up wherever we can. Tonight is an opportunity. Throughout the night is an opportunity. Tomorrow morning is an opportunity. The next day is an opportunity. So do it every day, and we can address this problem. Thanks for being here, and thanks for all of your efforts. Much appreciated.
Thank you, Steve.
So welcome, welcome. Welcome home, welcome, welcome.
forefathers and I say they built this country. For they came from far away to a land they did not know, the same way you do, my friend.
So welcome, welcome, emigrante, to my country. Welcome home, welcome, welcome, emigrante, to the country that I love.
I am proud of my forefathers, and I sing about their courage. For they spoke a foreign language and they labored with their hands the same way you do, my friend.
So welcome, welcome, emigrante, to my country. Welcome home, welcome, welcome, emigrante, to the country that I love.
I am proud of my forefathers, and I sing about their patience. For the work they did was lowly, and they dirtied up their clothes. They spoke a foreign language, and they labored with their hands. And they came from far away to a land they did not know, the same way you do, my friend.
So welcome, welcome, emigrante, to my country. Welcome home.
And that was a song recorded in the 60s by the Broadside Singers. That's the 1960s. Welcome, welcome, emigrante. It has, of course, there's a few considerations, like they came and murdered the Native American residents here, and some of them came in chains as slaves to build the country in bondage. And also, of course, some immigrants have been brought in to essentially provide cheap labor and break unions. So these are all considerations you should think about, even as you, well, as I listen to that song and think about they're trying to welcome people coming to this country who are poor, who are looking for a better life, who have been displaced from their countries by the military machinations of U.S. capitalists, largely U.S. government and their allies. But you got to consider all these things, I think, as you listen. You're tuned to Free Radio's stream at freakradio.org. If you have any questions or comments, you can give a call to 423-4833. Not a live number often, although you may reach me directly. It's not going to go directly into this stream or onto the air. Of course, we're not on the air at the moment. But you can possibly go into the next show, and that will be going on the stream next Thursday between 6 and 8 in the evening. So now I'm going to try to reach Brent Adams, who's with the Day and Night 24-Hour Storage Program.
Hello, Brent here.
Hey, Brent, I'm got you hopefully live on the stream of Free Radio. You up for it?
Oh, sure. Hi.
Hey. So we were having a conversation earlier today, and I put you off for a couple hours in the hopes of actually getting you more permanently, you know, on a little radio schmadio stuff. You spoke at some length, as did I. I spoke probably a longer length than anybody at the November 15th Speak Out. But there are some issues, I think, that you didn't raise or that you raised more recently. And I'm trying to make sure that I remember them, which, of course, I'm having trouble doing. But maybe you do.
That's great. I knew we were going to have this problem. We had a good conversation anyway. So at least this could be on the radio. Let's try to remember. Well, firstly, let me just jot down really quickly a few of the things relating to that. That event you had at the post office with the Fouda Bombs and some of the other activists around answering the closure of the encampment. Mainly, the thing I was raising in being there, and I wasn't there in the role of the warming center director. I was there in the role of somebody who, you know, participated with you in some of these camps historically, and then just following them along as a resident. I'll be as quick as I can, mainly just highlighting my take that I relayed the story about Jeremy Leonard as a rapid rehousing officer at the Homeless Services Center, that he's having a great deal of time, difficulty of getting people, finally, once they get their Section 8 voucher, which, you know, the list is open again, and he'll find a housing for them, and here they are finally with that great moment that they've been waiting for, often for years, and they've accrued so many tickets out on the street that have gone to collections that they actually can't access the housing because of their because of a faulty credit report.
Do you have any sense, Brent, of how many people that's actually impacted?
I think that impacts, well, it does impact every person that gets a citation that doesn't pay it, it doesn't appear, then it'll go to collection. I don't know, you know better than I do.
No, I mean from Jeremy, what he may have told you about the number of people he found.
He actually quit the job. He had such a difficult time placing people or locating people who are, you know, living outside. Once he gets them on a file and starts working with them, it's a systemic difficulty. You'll have to talk to him about that.
That's a good suggestion.
Mainly was my report of Peace Camp 2010. Recalling several of the arrests there, one including Linda LeMaster, who was put on a 2-year probation, and then several others who got citations. I think 6 in all, including Chris Doyen. And then finally, Freedom Sleepers, where I counted over the course of the year and a half, easily 10 citations per week and more, and then including arrests and 24-hour stay away orders. So that accrues to quite a number of citations. They weren't listed. They didn't have court support. That's a different conversation. But mainly what I just want people to realize that it's all well and good to stand your ground when you're camping as a person who sleeps outside, but let's remember that it does affect our life moving forward. I know because I had all kinds of legal issues when I was younger, and it took me a decade and a half to clean up my past so that I could, you know, rejoin society.
I think
when we're talking about a protest camp, and we've talked about it numerous times here.
Let me interrupt you for a moment, Brent.
I think that the homeless people should get citations prior to any person experiencing.
You were suggesting that they actually ring the homeless and be the first line of defense.
Yeah, that was the call at the post office. You know, 3 years ago, that the house people activists would you know stand around in front of the tents and prevent. Mm-hmm. But that was that was the plan. We didn't have enough house people out there to start with.
Yeah, yeah.
Continue.
But let me. I had some thoughts as you were saying that, and
yes, sir.
One of them was that I spoke to someone this morning. Actually, it was yesterday morning. On Saturday morning, I'm doing the, you know, it's not really Saturday; it's Sunday for the purposes of this show.
He's
gone. Yeah, it's weird. But I was actually pointing out to him what you were saying, which is that I said, "What do you do with your tickets?" And he said, "You know, I don't know. I dispose of them." I said, "Well, you're aware that this can have implications for various things, you know, credit, collection, when it goes to collection, driver's license, perhaps other things as well." And he said, "Yes, but you know, I think his point was that he was getting them anyway, and you know, he has a choice of whether to do that alone or in a group." And that has sort of been my point with these protests. Your point is very well taken, that you know, you want to protect the vulnerability of homeless people. And my point is always to tell people, as I did at this rally, you know, you're on your own with this stuff. We don't have fancy attorneys coming in. No one's going to stand up for you and say, "I'll take that ticket first." No, that's not going to happen. So when you do this, you know, you're gonna get the shaft if you do it, and you shouldn't do it unless you want that to, you know, that to happen. Because, and actually, ironically, there were no tickets, there were no police, and that hasn't been happening recently, probably because a combination of Boise versus Martin decision, and I think the sense that there is a real I don't want to call it compassion on the part of Andy Mills and Tony Elliott. I don't think that they are compassionate in that sense. I think that they just don't want to waste city time and money squeezing the balloon and moving people from one place to the
no,
other.
Oh, no, the citations are, they're not, I mean, that's the misunderstanding. They're writing plenty of citations. You say the numbers are down, but to my count, they're still getting, you know.
Well, they are. They're still getting them. No, that's true. I mean, I know they're down around Parks and Rec. I have not been able to get the police to cough up their sites yet.
The parks and the closure of Poconip? Oh. I mean, I don't see real compassion. I see.
Oh no, that's not compassion. I agree.
Public relations move that people think that writing these citations anymore, but they're, you know, they're writing lots of other ones.
Well, I think they use them to bully people. That's the main thing they want to do. They want to move them from place to place, and they also make people feel unwelcome. I don't see an increasingly compassionate attitude on behalf of the police or the community toward poor and homeless people based on the accounts I'm getting. What do you see?
Well, let's double back. What I want to see with actions like this is what I think you all hope you would achieve is activating the house population, getting people to come out there and support these. And I'm always thinking you're going to have that draw, but the reason I keep saying this is a failed sort of tactic, it's not that I don't support protest activism, I do, or protest camps. There's lots of instances. But what we need to do is have, our challenge is, how do we get housed people to believe in this movement and come out and get those citations en masse and have a proper civil disobedience act, not put people sleeping out, have house activists create flyers and put people on the line, and then our excuse is, oh, we're getting citations anyway, ... I just think it's what we have to do is to really send the message. And I say it's a failure because when you invite people to a protest and they sleep outside and they get citations, that's just, you know, it's on you. And so I just say that over and over. No, people don't have to agree with me. I've just seen it over many years. And so the challenge is how we blame the middle class, we blame city council, we blame Take Back Santa Cruz. But our challenge, that's our challenge. How do we, and that's what we do with our nonprofits.
What do you do with nonprofits?
Our challenge is, how do we activate the community at large and stop seeing ourselves as contrary to them, but seeing ourselves as them? When we start talking differently and seeing ourselves as part of this community, you've been here for decades now. It's time for you to really, you know, assert your citizenness and say, you know, this is us. What we tend to do is point our finger at them, the other people in this community. We blame them for all these situations. And what I have to do is now a new business leader, a nonprofit director, is, you know, wrap my hands around the entire community and build something that they'll really see value and support. Sometimes it's a subtle verbiage change. Some of the ways we speak and the words we use trigger. We get triggered when they use words like public safety. You know, it's just like, oh, that, I know what that means. That's a social cleansing sort of concept. You know, send the police. And we use words that trigger them. But if we, you know, what I want to find is, how do we, you and I, Robert, care about these people most?
Well,
you
know,
both anti-authoritarian people, we have issues around the government structure and things like that and policing.
Well,
but we really would like to have our behaviors ultimately profoundly benefit the people we care about most.
Sure. You know, Brent, I guess I have to, you know, point out that, you know, I haven't got a great brief for nonprofits. Yours is an exception, but I think most nonprofits aren't nonprofits at all. They are really sort of secondary capitalist structures for, you know, their job opportunities for some middle class people, their tax deduction opportunities for some other people. They give the patina of some kind of compassion to what is really utterly uncompassionate at its core, considering what could be done. And so it's fundamentally, the nonprofit stuff is fundamentally a bunch of horse shit, with some exceptions. I mean, as I said, I think what you're trying to do is quite clearly different. But, you know, it is quite a task that you're trying to do. And for me, you know, I think different people have different roles. And I think I see my role to some extent because of my preferences and my laziness, or maybe my age, or my, you know, limited experiences, and my inability or disinterest in actually trying out new things, is I tend to beat on the same old drums. I mean, you've noticed that. You've criticized it. And it's frankly likely to continue to some extent. But I'm I guess I want to get back to the question I asked you before, which is, what do you see? I guess I didn't really did it quite this way, but you've been doing this for a while. Do you see much difference between this year and last year in terms of how homeless people are being treated one way or another?
It's funny. Year to year, it does. It's the same routine with a different face. It's weird because you know, people come and go. It's weird, the novelty of it all. There's so many new people in town right now. and reorganization. You know, I don't know where all those people from the encampment went. A lot of them went to, you know, San Lorenzo Park, and now we have this camp behind Ross. I have a different role. I'm not downtown anymore. I'm off on Belker Street at the levee over by Ross. So I'm more focused on, I'm standing right here now looking at people coming and going, and now I'm quite aware of this population. It's a totally distinct, different population than the downtown people. There's more open drug use here. I'm seeing it right outside the window and people coming and going. And what we're trying to do is filter this population, try to find out who we can help with the storage program. Not all the people want to use that. This program, and also immediately, probably Wednesday or Thursday, we might be opening up for the warming center because of a rainstorm coming in. How can we help that? When you asked me with the distinction between this year and last year, I'm having a hard time making the comparison. What's different is the winter shelter organization is different. The way to access low barrier, easy to access shelter is totally different. I hope everybody can hear me. There is no low barrier shelter right now, even though the winter shelter is open. You have to pre-register online with an email. Downtown Streets team did get some first dibs. People exiting the River Street camp got some opportunities to get on that pre-registration. There were some people doing outreach, I don't know who they are, downtown at, you know, the food kitchens and stuff like that. But it's maxed out already. You have to contact Jeff Harris, who's managing that, with the Captain Harold. To get, let's say here, it's wintershelter.santacruz@gmail is the way to get on the pre-registration list. You can stand in front of one of the four shuttle lines and not get on, and that's what happened to us last night.
Tell me about that.
That's different.
I heard from a couple who came over, and they were upset and angry that they were unable to get on the shelter. And they said that where they were standing at the shuttle waiting, and they said that you were trying to advocate for them, but they wouldn't listen to you.
Yes, sir. You're talking about, I believe, we can't say their names. But
they did, actually, but go ahead.
I have good news. Last night we did what we shouldn't, we're not supposed to do, is lay out some cardboard and for their tent and got them a place to stay. They were denied shelter after waiting for weeks at the Faith Community Shelter because of behavior ticks. They have developmental challenges and they're married or they're together. And anyway, they were kicked out of that program with tears. And so we tried to get them on the shuttle last night and they weren't accessed. They had a real tough night last night. And I'm happy to say that Jeff got them on board tonight. They have, and I talked to them on the phone, so they're good for tonight.
Good,
Robert.
Good. Glad to hear that. But do you think that's a rare problem, or do you think that's going to be a difficulty that may recur?
Oh, it's going to be no. This is we are in a severe winter emergency shelter bed crisis. I can't call the alarm because I'm trying desperately to work with the parties, trying to get the city and the county to help fund and give floor space to the warming center. I'm hamstrung here because the community doesn't know we're in dire straits right now, and the only entity that to sound the alarm is like you or I. If I do it, then they don't want to play with me. So, and I have to come to the rescue. So it turns out I'm going to be kind of like another regular shelter, only on infrequent nights. Mm. It's a real fucked up situation. Right, even today, trying to figure out, first of all, how to deal with it emotionally and then deal with it professionally, because I'm about to shoot myself in the foot like I always do and come out, you know, with guns blazing and then lose all my opportunities and contracts. And I'm really upset. I'm frustrated with the city. I hope I can say that here without getting in too much trouble. The county's doing what they can, but it's all fakey. We could all take a strong stand as a community and say we demand the service that's necessary now. All of our people who sleep outside need safe, clean, dignifying shelter, and we can do it for far cheaper than we've been spending $2,000 a tent on that encampment. I'm ranting, but...
Is there any prospect? I went through, as I mentioned, the Ross Tent City yesterday.
Yeah.
And I saw.
Is that what we want to call it? Do we want to call it the Ross Tent City?
Well, look, let's put it this way. The Ross collection of tents, I mean, there were about 20 of them. There was a lot of tents.
I mean, Ross gets the moniker.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's behind Ross, and that's what I'm Jessica York has christened it, I suppose. I don't know.
Okay, all right.
It's quite possible. I mean, that's not necessarily what they call it. I only talked to a couple people there. So I haven't yet, you know, got a sense of what they're calling themselves, if anything.
I've been calling it the Ross Camp.
Yeah, I would say that's what I've been calling it too. It's right. It adjoins, you know, the levee path, as well as being next. I took the hard way in through a hole in the fence, which I guess was the place where people rushed out to help people in an accident the other day, which I think you may have mentioned, or at least somebody mentioned it, and it's going to be
And then they finally got real good notice on KION or KSBW. They did an expose. They've been named. They've been celebrated.
But not sheltered, right? Not given any decent shelter.
It's really cool though, because in this moment where the parks are being closed, and everyone thinks it's about homelessness rather than the tinderbox nature that the woodland is, you could almost sneeze out there and start a fire. It's not so much about homelessness, but it's nice to have a real story that these guys were so affable at. And just saying, we're not heroes. This is, you know, the car was on fire. You rushed to the car and dragged the person out. You know, it's not like anything special that they did. And that's really nice to hear that they say we are like everybody else. You are us. We are you. So that was cool.
Yeah, I know. It is, but it sounds like the Christmas moment to me. I don't, you know, the once a year charity, the unusual event that gets a little attention and then disappears the next day. You know, it makes me cynical.
I don't think it'll be forgotten. I think that was it was a jarring, painful thing. A lot of people felt emotional trauma about what happened on that day. I was there. The miracle is there was no blood splattered. We could have seen bodies crushed left and right. It should have happened. It just didn't. It was a miracle. But these guys came out and saved a person's life by their burning car.
Mm-hmm. This was at the intersection of 1 and. And Highway 9, right?
Yeah,
for those who just tuned in or didn't catch up with that. You know, Brent, I'm going to I've referenced the you spoke twice at the rally, and a lot of what you began to say in this particular broadcast here is reiterated there. I'm going to give you a chance to sum up and then roll on. And if you have other updates you want to pass on, I can still be reachable by phone here if you call me. But let's do that.
And I'll be quick. We saw a death today. Gloria Rovet, whatever her name is, I can't remember her name is, took a photograph of somebody who died over at the Culvert. You mentioned that today. You probably already have that out on your thing.
No, I haven't mentioned it yet, but it'll come up probably. Go ahead.
Okay, all right. No, I'll let you talk about it. Day and night storage program. We're at 150 Felker Suite H. We open at 8 in the morning to 10 in the morning and then 5 to 7 every day p.m. The hotline is easy to remember, so I hope everyone can get it in their memory banks. It's 246-1234. You'll find information about that in the Warming Center and how to get a blanket if you need it. Always warmingcenterprogram.com at Gmail or whatever. Thank you, Robert.
Yeah, I'll just add what I was saying to you in the previous phone call that we had. If you happen to be visiting camps, and you're probably too busy with what you are doing at the two programs you're working.
I'm going to the Ross camp right now.
Oh, if anybody's interested in giving you their number and their contact information and want to share it with the Huffsters folks, let them know that that's something that I'd be happy to have happen. So we can. I'd like to see people in different campsites establish a network so they can at least advise what's going on out there. And this, you know, this kind of organizing is, I think, just as important as, for example, as registering to vote or coming to the unresponsive.
And say that again, because I was doing this thing in my mind. Wondering, do you want them to have your number?
Yeah, I'd give them my number, but also if you can get their number, ask if you can share it with.
I see. Yeah.
And their email address too, so we can eventually establish contacts between these campsites, because this is the real winter shelter. That's what you got right now. That's what you're going to have this winter, you know, barring, you know, sudden demonstration of miraculous something from the county and the city, however much you try to work on that, Brent. I mean, that's my suspicion.
Well, you know that what we were talking about at the end of our last conversation is we're really hoping to see some community members either housed or within these encampments who are, you know, not so challenged by mental health or drug addiction that they could see themselves as community leaders and create that network themselves.
Yeah, for sure.
Where are these people who are lifting that community up? You know, let's get a pee bucket, a garbage container, a sharps container, that we're beginning to network and create the camps that could be sustainable in the future that aren't renegade, hodgepodge, ultimately, finally, drug-oriented camps. You know, we have to understand that people are trying to have, you know, buyer's clubs so they can all afford what they need medically around drug addiction. Mm-hmm. We should all just come to terms with that. But additionally, they shouldn't be places where people are encountering drugs for the first time. Mm-hmm. Where we saw in San Lorenzo Park, I don't want to see somebody who gets directed to this encampment at Ross, who is not a drug addict, and within a couple of weeks starts using. Mm-hmm. Or people who are trying to, you know, in recovery, or somebody with mental health issues starting to self-medicate. That's the worst thing that these sort of camps can do. But anyway, I'm just drifting.
Yeah, I mean, of course, worse than that would be freezing to death in a culvert somewhere. I mean, that's I would say that's even worse than getting addicted to to meth or heroin or whatever.
What we're not seeing is people in the sound of our voice on this show here is who are the, I mean, between Robert, who has a dedicated role, well respected in the community as a a
cranky character.
Some people call you a gadfly, but you really speak truth to power. You have a laser beam wit, and you're intelligent around that. And you help, you know, you've made a lot of changes just by uttering, you know, speaking out.
I wish.
What's true is there's a huge missing space between you and I, between Food Not Bombs or Keith McHenry and others, and where I'm at. There's a big void out there where we were hoping that maybe the people through the Coalition on Homelessness in Santa Cruz could step in. The Santa Cruz Coalition on Homelessness, distinct from the one in San Francisco, where there's a space here that can be developed where someone can be out there interacting with people experiencing homelessness, and meeting needs on the ground and kind of building up our community of people who sleep outside. Even, you know, you can see it as a voting block. You can see it as an activist army of people who sleep outside. We can really benefit. And that could be a fun side project for students or activists or anybody. It's just not really out there. People usually have some angle. I have an angle. You have an angle. But, you know, who's out there really?
People who are living
social network.
The people who are living the life have got to do it. They're the ones who have to organize. In fact, one of the prime organizing groups for the sleep out at city outside the post office was this group called Home Free, which partially was a bunch of travelers who were passing through, but partially was some local homeless people. And I think that the people who organize are those who come together in these encampments, and they organize quietly. They're kind of sort of under the sub rosa, so to speak. They're below the visible line of sight, because they're engaged in drug activity. Maybe they're afraid their stuff's going to be stolen. Maybe they've seen the bad consequences of being too public with what they're doing, and they know also that homeless people who are public are regarded as the enemy, the menace, the vermin, you know, and that's just so anyway, but they may be the kind of people you're talking about who are already in their own small way doing that. But I would like to see them linked up in some way with each other if they want to link up. And if you're making regular trips to Ross, which is just across the bridge from where you work, maybe you could be, although, you know, this might not please the nonprofit people that you want to get money from, still.
I don't think anybody matters about that. My problem is I'm literally operating a nonprofit, writing grants, doing fundraising.
Yeah,
I did four events in a month and a half. Events. That's crazy. Two of them were fundraisers. And three
Have a large, when I was at one of your...
On top of that, I'm doing a warming center in Watsonville, one here, expandable, and then a program. So I got so much going on.
Right. Well, what about those folks who attend?
What I'm saying is...
Your board of directors. What about them?
I mean to go out there. The board of directors.
You have a board of directors. I saw that board of directors.
We have a board of directors. We have the lowest legal limit right now is three people. Treasurer,
Well, what I mean is, you had a bunch of people sitting.
No, we're building that out.
You had people sitting around a table who all seemed to be extremely interested. You know, this was like, what, 6 months ago when you were beginning your storage program, or 8 months ago.
Oh, yeah, you know, there.
And they were, you know, they are clearly, and you've had large, I don't want to say large crowds, but significant gatherings of people who are, you know, and you've had your problems and divisions in the group and all that, so as anybody has. But some of these people surely might be, you know, also you might be able, well, I don't know them.
Oh,
you do.
Believe me. I mean, I did my work trying to build that advocacy group. One was the Santa Cruz Coalition on Homelessness. It just didn't, the advocacy part of it didn't work, but what came out of it was the storage program.
That's good.
Result, just like Warming Center was an effort of us having those meetings about we should have a warming center. We weren't trying to create one. We were trying to spark one. So sometimes, you know, careful what you ask for, or sometimes the hero you're seeking is you.
Yeah, but you're only one person, as you said. You only do a certain amount. And I'm just thinking those other folks who are there who seem to share your concerns might be willing to split at least some of the responsibility. But you know better than I, you know.
If that was going to happen, it would have.
I got you.
And I still believe in that. We're going to have quarterly coalition on how, I mean, things are happening. And but what I want to, I want to demonstrate, like, look what I built. You know, like, I'm not an egomaniac, but I do have a bit of an ego, as we all do. But look how easy it is to do this shit. Brent Adams, who's just a fucking, you know, I'm a jerk, and it turns out these things are highly doable. So pick a thing and do it, and let's try to help people.
Here, here. Well, cheers. I'll leave it there. Anything else you want to add?
No, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Brent Adams of the Storage Program. Again, his phone number, if you want access to the Storage Program or the Winter Shelter, 423-1234. That's 423-1234. Now, music time.
It's an early spring day in a California town. A woman home all alone. The doorbell rings, she lets two men in who want to wait until her friend gets home. Well, time drags on, they're drinking beer. Next thing you know, they're getting out of line. Well, then her friend shows they get to trading blows. The odds are 2-1 and one's behind.
Inez jumped up and screamed, "Get out of my house!" and went out to make sure they'd gone.
Inez.
But they waited for her and they raped her and beat her right there on the ground. She went for her .22 and then went out to track them down.
Yes.
Shot the 300-pound man who helped rape her, and he fell dead on the ground.
After a while, they brought her to trial for murder in the first degree. The man who had raped her testified against her and naturally got off scot-free. The defense said,
"Your Honor, this woman was raped. It's clear that her crime is justified."
The judge said, the DA said,
"Inez, did you take off your panties? Were you wearing a bra? Did you like it?"
Inez screamed,
"I killed him and I'm glad that I did. If the other man died, I'd feel fine."
A man on the jury said, "After all, they were just trying to show her a good time." Inez!
Got the right, you know women got the right to fight.